Buying online from a Chinese factory? Then today's show is just for you, episode number 71.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Cheerios is my favorite brand of cereal. I don't have it that often, but my buddy Dave Ho brought back a jumbo two-pack from the U.S. after his Christmas holidays there. So I've been enjoying them every day for the month of January. What I didn't bring was milk, so we had some ordered from the internet. Yeah, I know, ordering milk online in China is pretty crazy, but my wife, Wendy, buys everything online. And it was a 10-case bulk pack. Usually it was like fresh milk delivered somewhere, but this time she tried to save money or try something new, and it was full cream condensed milk. And we had a small discussion about that I can't use that to eat my cereal. She didn't really understand why. But let's just say this morning when I woke up, I filled my bowl of Cheerios with condensed milk. But I guess that's just part of life in China and some of the things I miss about back home. Okay, anyways, this week we have a famous friend of mine, Mike Bellamy, the China business and sourcing expert. I met him while he was a speaker at the Global Sources Trade Show at one of the first times I was ever in Asia in the fall of 2007. And I got some one-on-one advice with him that day and I met him and he helped get me on the right track. Today he's going to talk about, kind of talk towards the entrepreneurs today listening that maybe don't have the funds to fly out to China and visit factories or use sourcing agents. Maybe they're searching on Alibaba or Global Sources or other online directories. So he's going to give us some tips of avoiding some pitfalls or scams. Also, don't forget that if you miss something, the notes are always as detailed as I can be on globalfromasia.com/episode71. Now let's listen up and take notes. Thank you everyone for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. This one's a special one for me. We have Mike Bellamy from PassageMaker with us today. Thanks for being here, Mike.
My pleasure. Good to finally meet up with you.
Yeah. I know we've had a little trouble coordinating. I'm really excited to get you on here. And I remember you were one of the first people I met in China. You're always involved with the Global Sources trade show at the speaker session. And when I was first there in 2007, you were one of the guys that really connected well with me. And I remember you had like a round table and I got a few minutes and you gave me always great advice and tips when I first came here. And I always appreciate that, Mike. Thank you. And
hey, I remember that round table because you asked me, you were talking about all your excitement about China and how you wanted to. At that time, you had your bar supply store.
Yeah,
and you asked a lot of questions about how do you go factory direct. And you really showed enthusiasm. And my suggestion was, since you were single at that time, that you should, leave the East Coast in the U.S. and move over to China for a little while. You've taken my advice to heart. Now you have a family here, wife and child.
Yeah.
I gave you that advice.
I remember because I was really the first week I landed in Hong Kong first, and I didn't really have that idea that you could live in China or Asia. I always thought it was just a place where people came to visit factories and then went back. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you made that seem like a reality, and you have been doing it, and now I'm doing it. Yeah, it's amazing. Like,
I want to pick on you a little bit and tell your audience one of my favorite stories.
Sure.
You have to get a lot of credit because you did just pick up and move without speaking the language or having understood the culture. Now you do, but your first days here, I remember how wide open your eyes were and everything was a surprise. One of the stories that my coworkers and I still talk about is how you were living in Shukou, but you came over to visit us in Lohu District, which is like an hour away. And we went out to happy hour, and I think you had jet lag really bad because you decided to go home and you got in one of those pedicabs. They don't have them anymore, but it's like the rickshaw tricycle. And you told the driver where you were going to go. And then you fell asleep. So that was 45 minutes away by car. That's like 5 hours away in one of these pedicabs. But the guy was so happy because he's going to get to pedal all night for a major customer. And I remember, didn't you wake up like on the highway?
Yeah. This is a story I still remember clearly when I woke up, I had woken up, or I think he woke me up. He had pulled over on the side of the like Bin Hai Highway, and he had shaking my shoulder, like kind of like, I think he was insisting in Chinese that as far as he was willing to go, or he wanted me to pay him maybe a deposit, because I think it was the tab was going higher and higher, and is like, I don't know how he keeps track of the price, but he had woken me up, and it was pretty late too. I think we had a late night, and it was obviously dark, and my poor assistant, Melissa at the time, I gave her a ring on my phone and woke her up and passed the phone to the biker. And he was like, you know, like, kind of like loudly speaking, like, you know, I think he's saying this is so far. I need him to give me money or confirm he has enough to pay me, and then passed the phone back. And Melissa is explaining that you're on the highway and it's going to be like hours more on this bike. And he's insisting you pay like, like hundreds of RMB, which is even in America is, you know, not so cheap, but you know, like, so I think, I was bargaining with them, and I ended up, it was like 50 or 75 RMB I gave him, which is like, you know, like $10. And then I got out of the bike on the highway and I had to find a cab, and it was amazing. Memories of those first days.
It would be like, getting in a cab in Manhattan and say, pedal me to Buffalo.
yep.
All right. Well, I won't pick on you anymore. Let's get back to the interview.
That's a fun memory for me, for sure. So I'd like to maybe, you know, I'll give you a little bit of time to introduce yourself. I know we have a lot of great businesses you're involved with. Maybe you can give us a quick summary.
Sure. I'm originally from upstate New York, over towards Buffalo, and I came to Asia in the mid-90s as an exchange student, thought that I was coming over here for a semester or two, and like you, I've been here ever since, you know, married with two children, China has become home. I've been running a sourcing agency called Passage Maker for 15 years now, and our group of companies has expanded. Now, not only do we do sourcing, but also engineering, process control, quality assurance, legal services, a wide range of stuff, and also a little bit of investment in terms of sometimes customers come to us and they need a hand getting started. Maybe they don't have their upfront capital in place. So sometimes we actually get involved in taking equity in these projects that are going to be sourced in China. That's a bit of an overview.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot there. And I remember even in 07 when I was just starting, you had already pretty well established, and now it's definitely grown more. So it's great, great work on your side. So I think we always like to talk a little bit about the story. I mean, we try to keep this on the business side for the most of these shows, but you know, I think people are always curious what you mentioned quickly. Maybe give us a little bit more on, you know, exchange student in China or how you got here. Or?
Well, long story short, way back in the early 90s, I wanted to complete my double degree in diplomacy and economics when I was going to school in Washington, D.C. In order to do that, you have to complete your language requirement. So I dabbled in a little bit of Japanese, but it was, you know, it was very difficult for me. Not so much the language, but difficult to get up for an 8 o'clock laboratory my freshman year.
I understand.
So I ended up waiting until my junior year, and the guidance counselor said, hey, if you want this double degree, the only way you're going to get it is to go overseas and complete your language. So I saw, while he was giving me that talk, I saw a sign on the wall about a Rotary Ambassadorial Scholarship where Rotary would pay for American students to go overseas. So I applied to Rotary and was lucky enough to get their support. And having never left America before, I found myself on a 2-year scholarship to Japan.
Wow.
I remember flying into Tokyo, and you know, I started to study a little bit of Japanese, but the only sign that I could recognize was the M on McDonald's. And everything else was like, uh-oh, I am screwed. I'm going to have to learn this language really quick. So fast forward, after 2 years in Japan studying like factory management and Japanese quality processes, I did some backpacking in Asia, including China, and this is like 93. So it was obvious, you know, the writing is on the wall. China's ascending. It's a great economy. And keep in mind that Tiananmen Square was 89. So all the foreign money, all the foreign managers left China about that time. Here I show up in 93, And so it was so easy to get a job because there was no competition. There weren't any other foreigners. So because of Japanese, I could understand the Chinese characters. They're very similar, but I couldn't speak or communicate in Chinese. So I started going to language school. And long story short, even though I loved Japan, after my 2 years there, I saw a much bigger opportunity in China. So I changed my focus to China business and enrolled in language school in China and did an MBA program back in the US, where 18 months in South Carolina, 18 months in Beijing and Harbin. So I kind of got hooked on the China experience, and there are a lot of opportunities back then, even more than there are today, because it was, you know, new and there wasn't as much competition in terms of other foreigners. So I kind of maybe was the right guy with the right skills at the right time. Luckily, not some big plan that I had. I just kind of showed up there at the right time.
Great. I mean, but I think that's something to say. I think just like you inspired me to come here too. A lot of people just don't make that step, you know, which is a massive one, is to come out here and see it yourself and experience it. So and see where you fit. So it's really great story. Now let's get back to business. And sure. You're the China sourcing guy for sure. So, you know, I think there's so many different topics on this, a massive topic, and you have a great book that we mentioned later. And so I think we decided to title this China Sourcing Due Diligence Tactics. So there's different types. So maybe we'll start off with the different types of China sourcing. There's maybe the wholesale or off the shelf. There's the tweaking of maybe some enhancements of a pre-existing product. And then there's maybe fully customized. Are those the three main, or is that right? I mean, I think this is some of the stuff I did some research on before.
Well, I think what you're talking about is, yes, you know, general sourcing. Everyone wants to go China direct, but that can mean different things to different people. For example, there are different tiers. Is China direct China factory direct, or dealing with a wholesaler, or maybe even a retailer online that's based in China? So different tiers have different strategies. For example, the strategies that you need to be aware of in terms of avoiding scams are a lot different if you're buying from a wholesaler online as opposed to buying from an actual factory in China. So it depends on your readership your listenership, but my experience has generally been helping my customers purchase, you know, $2 to $20 million worth of product in China, and that's definitely at factory direct. But I have also dabbled a little bit in buying at the wholesale level, you know, $10,000 worth of widgets from the electronics wholesale district, or, you know, 5,000 iPad cases, generic cases, from a wholesaler online. And very different pitfalls and best practices apply depending on the tier that you're sourcing at.
Sure. So I guess we have a pretty wide range of listeners to give you some ideas. I mean, mostly I think they are the smaller entrepreneur or medium-sized businesses. So maybe we'll keep that in mind on the show.
Maybe it would be a good, a lot of people are worried about scams. So could we tackle that right off the bat?
Yeah, of course.
The scams tend to target smaller buyers. And by smaller buyer, I mean anybody that's buying less than $5,000 from an entity in China may be the target of a scam.
Sure.
And
sure.
Just to share with your readers a resource, every morning I log into supplierblacklist.com, and it's basically a directory of scams and suppliers who have done wrong by the buyer. And so you'll just, if you're not quite sure just how bad things are, go visit that website, supplierblacklist.com. It'll set you straight.
Great.
The good news is that you can apply some really easy and affordable techniques to avoid scams. And maybe I could give you a couple of my pointers right now.
This is a good topic. I think, yeah, especially because I think this is where a lot of the listeners have never come to China like we had done, and they're still remote in the US or in Europe. So this is a good topic, and they're doing small orders. Like they're like searching online and, you know, sending a bank wire I don't think many Western unions. So this might be a good way to go for sure.
Yeah. Very dangerous. You know, I think you're almost, insane to just go and do a Google search and find a supplier, because, you know, these websites will say, oh, you can buy 2,000, you know, SD cards from us, or a USB drive, something like that, USB thumb drive. And most, I mean, almost more than not are fake. That's a lot different than going to an online directory where the company is listed under a reputable third party, like a, you know, Global Sources you've already mentioned, and TradeSpark is another really good one. So if you go to a directory and find a supplier, as opposed to just going, you know, out on the internet, that's a step in the right direction. But even on the directories, there's plenty of scams, and the directories don't give any guarantee that the suppliers on their list are legitimate or good factories, professional, I mean. So it's up to us as buyers to protect ourselves. And, you know, there are a couple questions you can ask that don't cost any money. Like, give me a reference. You would not believe how many buyers don't ask their sellers just for a couple references. And the seller might say, oh, I can't tell you my customer list for security reasons. Hey, look, I'm in America. Give me a customer in Australia. We're not in competition. Just let me talk to somebody. So if the seller can't give you at least one reference, yeah, that's a real big red flag and you should run away. Also, be very hesitant to do business with an online seller that has a massive portfolio of products. For example, I visited the websites of scam artists, and the English is very polished, the web design is nice, but they're selling like ATVs, cameras, circuitry, cell phones, you know, Apple products. It's just, hey, unrealistic that one company is going to have that type of diversified product range. So most likely it's they're just putting up the products to attract people, get that initial payment, get as much money as they can from you, and then disappear.
Yeah, I agree. I think I've learned that the hard way, because like with my bar products, there's such a wide range of materials and specialties. Even in that range alone, it's really impossible to be an expert on all the, you know, to really succeed in sourcing is to be vertical, to know, or trading at least, is to know deeply your product and material. So yeah, I definitely agree. Those sourcing companies or trading companies that list like every type of product and every kind of category are definitely red flags. I'd agree with you there.
Yeah, and if you do find something that looks legit and they do provide references, one mistake that entrepreneurs make, because they're so excited about making a buck and launching their product, that they forget to do a test order. That's so essential. Even with a legitimate factory, you want to do some type of pre-production approval process, or a PPAP. So it makes sense. Even the professional buyers with professional factories do test orders. So as small buyers, you know, I think you're crazy not to do some kind of test order before placing the full order. And if it's a scam artist, most likely you'll know right away, because the money that you paid for the initial order will disappear.
Oh, man.
So you're saving yourself a lot. And, you know, it's not just small money. That website I gave before about supplier blacklist, one company lost $1 million in a scam. Ugh. Where they had a $3 million order and they thought they were safe, so they paid only 30% up front.
Oh, man.
And then there was another lady from French woman in Dubai that bought, she was so excited to get on the iPhone craze that she bought some clones, and she knew that they were clones.
Yeah.
But the scam artist tricked her, and instead of sending $100,000 worth of clones, he sent her $100,000 worth of scrap phones. So that, and the lady thought she was smart. She says, okay, I'm not going to pay the supplier until they provide the bill of lading, the shipping documents, because if it's on the water, then the product might be coming. So what happened? The scam artist probably bribed someone at the customs authority and said, hey, don't mark this as scrap. Mark it as iPhone clones.
Oh,
so 100,000 euros worth of beat up junk phones.
Horrible.
This woman calls me a day later to say, hey, can you help me find this scam artist? You know, the address was just an apartment and somewhere in Shenzhen. They were long gone with their money.
Yeah, I should send you some of my stories. I get some people send me, like, not as big a scale, but one woman, she thought she was buying from the applefactory.com or I don't know what domain they had. It's like it was misspelling too. And she's some woman in like, I don't know, like Kansas. And she says, I ordered two and it was said buy one, get one free. And I sent the $200 for two iPhones. And where it says Shenzhen, and I searched and I think my blog came up or something. So she's asking me if I could help her because the scammer had been replying to her emails and she paid Western Union. And it was not, of course, nothing in the millions, but it's, you know, for her, it's, you know, it's some money and it was like a gift for her son or something like that. And these people don't have any idea that you can't buy like an iPhone off, you know, like an authentic one in China from the factory. They think that these things come off the factory. It's amazing.
You know, it's not just Apple products, but any major brand, especially electronics or fashion, is probably going to be less expensive at the mega mall back in America than in China because the consumption taxes are different. And also because of the leverage that the brand holders have with their suppliers, they don't casually let their Chinese suppliers sell product out the back door. You know, that's a real no-no. So when someone tells you that they have that they're the supplier to Samsung, you know, don't really believe it.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. And I hope nobody listening has thought they'd found like the authentic Samsung supplier that they can get a backdoor from. It's not that easy for sure.
Right.
So, well, I have some questions here. A test order, what will be a fair size of a test order? Is there a standard or I guess it depends or?
Yeah, it really depends on the type of products that you're doing. For example, you know, if it's inexpensive, you know, tennis socks, you might have a couple thousand in your test order. But something expensive like high-end electronics, it might only be 10 units. So it really depends on your budget and the risk of failure. For example, if a tennis sock, what can go wrong with that? Maybe the thread count, but something complex like a custom-made tablet device, you know, there's so many things that can go wrong with there. So you want a little bit more sampling.
Sure. So I know we've actually in the past talked about Kickstarter, and I think you've had some clients with Kickstarter. You know, I think these people are maybe I wish this existed when I first came to China, honestly, because I was the guy with the ideas. And you know, so a lot of these guys have good marketing skills and they're creative, but they don't know how to source. So what's the process? I mean, they can usually get funding on Kickstarter before they can even make the product. Where should they get involved with you or with sourcing in this case? What, you know, specific to like crowdfunding or Kickstarter?
Yeah, usually those customers who have been funded on crowdfunding platforms find me in two situations. One is where they're great at marketing. They've got an engineered product that's selling. They've gotten orders from their customers, but they don't have a supply chain in place. Yeah. So they outsource the sourcing and have professionals on the ground in China, basically have my team find and manage the suppliers. The other group that finds me are the ones that in their business plan, you know, they get investors, whether it's online or Silicon Valley or whatever, based on the power of their product, and they just assume that finding a supplier is easy, or maybe, you know, somebody, they've got a Chinese American on the team who has a cousin in Dongguan that sister owns a factory. So they just say, oh yeah, it should be easy. And then things start to fall apart and they realize how important it is to find the right supplier, because without a source, everything, you know, you don't have a business. So they hire passage maker to get them out of a jam. So my suggestion is, one, just be understand that finding a supplier in China is not as easy as it sounds. Let me put it this way. It's really easy to find a supplier, but it's much more complex to find the perfect supplier that's going to meet your targets for price, quality, and lead time. So don't be complacent with just, oh, I'll find any supplier in China, because most likely just your average supplier isn't going to do it for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, thinking back to those early days when I was sleeping on the side of a highway, getting dropped off by a car, you know, I had no idea. And I think a lot of, especially Kickstarter entrepreneurs or totally not factoring the amount of complexity and the what's involved in making it actually happen. So I think they should probably as soon as they have a sample, right, before they even maybe list it on the they should have a better idea of the pricing and the fulfillment before they
Let's be honest about this. If you go to Walmart or Home Depot, you turn stuff over, everything appears to be made in China. So I'm not saying that it can't be done. I'm just saying you would be surprised at the number of projects that fail because the buy side didn't find the right supplier up front. So the beauty is once you find that good supplier, everything else is really easy. You know, placing repeat orders and product compliance and no QC headaches. But if you found a supplier that really isn't the right supplier and you try to get in bed with them and you invest your energy and money into getting a supplier up to speed that really can't do it, then there's only going to be headaches down the road. You know, I like to look at it this way. You know, the Chinese recently put a man in space. They built the Great Wall. So there's no question about the Chinese not being able to do something. Yes, they can do it. So when you ask somebody in China, can you make this product for me? They say, yeah, sure, I can make that for you. You know, with enough money and time, they can build the space shuttle. That's a lot different than saying, have you made this? Show me some samples that you've made. Show me, you know, some production parts. Because everybody will say, yes, 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 we can make the product. And then only later you find out that they've never made this before and they're hoping to build a factory around your order. That happens all the time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't want to always pick. I think to salespeople, because usually you're talking to a salesperson, especially if you're overseas in America, you know, you're chatting on Skype, probably talking to a 25-year-old, you know, English graduate from a Chinese university. So they just want to get their commission and they'll promise and say whatever they can to get that order. So, like you said, like getting samples, seeing references. I think just searching on even these directories, you're going to search a MP4 player, you're going to get like hundreds of pages and pages of these suppliers. And I know that's your specialty and, you know, you have your systems, but what kind of tips could you, you know, get down to like 5 pages instead of like 500 pages on a directory?
First, be very specific about what your dream factory would look like. You know, how many employees, how many units per day can they produce? What location are they? Maybe you need them close to your battery supplier in South China or something like that. Are they close to a certain port? Do they have a good reputation? You know, do they have an import-export license? Do they have experience selling to a given market? So write down a long list about what your ideal partner would look like, and then you start researching online, but don't go out and contact everybody you see. You just compare their websites on the directory versus your checklist of, you know, attributes. And then you get it down to maybe 15. And at this point, you still don't ask price. You simply ask, oh, your website list mentions that you have a capacity of 5,000 units a day. Is that accurate? And because if you start asking about price too early, subconsciously, you'll gravitate towards the supplier with the lowest cost. And usually that's the supplier with the lowest cost usually has, there are hidden expenses other places, like they have a 5% defect rate, or you end up having to fly to China 5 times to help them fix their supply chain. So lowest price does not mean lowest cost all in. So get it down to like 5 suppliers based on their attributes. And then you start asking them, okay, tell me about your price.
Yeah, that's a good tip for sure. It also, I think, shows you're more serious as a buyer. I think one other thing with the online world now and directories, anybody can search a directory and start mass messaging these suppliers. So maybe on the other side, these manufacturers are also not sure if you're serious or not. Do you have any maybe tips for showing that you're serious?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, when I first came to China in the mid-90s, simply by being a round-eye foreigner with a US passport was enough to get me a sit down with any major factory, even huge factories. Now, the situation's totally changed. Just because you're an American buyer doesn't mean that the factory's gonna, you know, jump up and salute you and give you a quick quotation. As a buyer, you need to make yourself, you need to be a attractive buyer. I'm not saying exaggerate or lie. You don't go in saying, oh, we're a new company, but we should order 1 million units next year. you know, because if that doesn't happen, the supplier is going to feel let down and they're going to try to get a lot of extra money out of you some other place. So it's much better to put together maybe an introduction that explains what's attractive about you. You're breaking out some new technology, or you have a potential order with a major retailer. You know, make yourself attractive in some legitimate way so that the supplier sees you as a good partner rather than just some purchase order number.
Got it. And then, like you said, I think also trying to come out to China and not just being like a handle on Skype or an email address, but being a real person also, I think definitely differentiates yourself for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, it's hard to take time off from work, but China's, you know, it's on the other side of the world, but it's just a flight away. And once you're here, everything's affordable and it's easier to get around today than it was 10 years ago. So there's really no excuse for not coming and checking out these partners, especially if you're serious about doing business with them.
Sure. Sure. So I have a point here about buzzwords or keywords maybe that people could use or should use when they're talking to a supplier. I have an easy list like the FOB, XWorks, desk for your quotation. Is there any like quick and dirty list of like of buzzwords?
Well, you know, you need to know your QC terms as well. That could probably be what ISO means and things. But let's address that EXW and FOB because it's pretty important. A lot of novice buyers make the mistake of telling their supplier, hey, give me a quote. And the supplier emails back 52 cents. Okay, now is that with or without batteries? Is that delivered to New Jersey? Is that EXW, meaning pick it up at the factory gate? Is it FOB, meaning freight on board, where the supplier is responsible to deliver it to the boat at the Chinese port, and then you're responsible for shipping it across the world? So a lot of the novice buyers, they just see this low, what appears to be a low price, and usually that's EXW without receipts, which means you take title to it at the factory's door, and then you're responsible for getting it on a truck to get it to the local port, for paying the taxes, clearing outbound customs, processing any value-added tax rebate if applicable. And unless you have a license in China, you can't do it. So I've seen so many small buyers think that they're getting this really low price from a factory that's not professional. And then the factory says, well, you bought it at EXW. It's up to you. It's your headache to get it out of the country. We don't even have an import-export license. So, you know, be really careful when you see these low prices, because there's usually some, there's some headache waiting for you.
Yeah. It's always, I've learned that the hard way. So hopefully others can listen and take this advice as it is. So we're kind of wrapping up. Is there any last point that I maybe missed or you'd want to add to?
Sure. I could talk you know, for
yeah,
hours.
Yeah, exactly. Like these, this could be
I've made so many mistakes myself during my early career, and during the early days of my career, I made a lot of mistakes and willing to tell people about it. But some of the ways that you can protect yourself, first off, make sure that you use a purchase order. A lot of buyers just send an email with their description of what they want to buy. God forbid something goes wrong. You can't take your email into a court and say the supplier screwed me. You know, you got to have a contract or a purchase order that's bilingual in Chinese. The good news is, you know, that, and I'm associated with a Chinese law firm, so it's a bit of marketing here, but whether you use Asia Bridge Law or any other firm or Chai Bridge Law, you know, make sure that you've got a good purchase order and contract in place, not only so it protects you, but if it's bilingual, you can get the supplier on the same page from day one. So often the contract and the description of what the quality standards are or the expectations about intellectual property protection are very clear on the English language document, but the supplier didn't bother to translate it. So they're going down one path from day one. The buyer's thinking things are going down another path. And then a year later, it falls apart. The reason is because neither side was going in the same direction from day one. So a contract not only protects you in a court of law, but it sets the tone that you're professional. And more importantly, it clarifies to the supply side your expectations. So my first tip is get yourself a bilingual purchase order and or contract. If you don't have a couple hundred dollars to spend on legal support to get a contract in place, you probably shouldn't be buying from China in the first place. Now, another tip would be, before you send any money to what you think is a factory, make sure that the Chinese name on the contract is the same Chinese name on the bank account, is the same Chinese name on the door of the factory or on the business license. You would not believe the number of times I've been contacted by people that think that the supplier disappeared with their money. And what happened was that the supplier, or maybe one of the employees at the supplier, signed a contract, made everything formal, and then when it came to sending money, had the customer send the money to their private account. They get the money and disappear. The supplier can't be held liable because you sent the money to the wrong place.
Yeah, yeah.
And good luck hiring an investigator or getting the cops to work with you in China to track down that bad employee that disappeared with the money. You know, so long story short, make sure that the name on the contract matches the name on the bank account where you're sending the money is the same name as the business license of the company you're doing business with.
Yeah, that's really, really great, Mike. And thanks again for sharing so openly. Maybe a little bit help promote your book and your resources. It's more than a book, really. It's a great resource. So can you maybe share a little bit about that if you like?
Sure. The Essential Reference Guide to China Sourcing, available on my blog at chinasourcinginfo.org. It's also available on Amazon, and it only costs $58, but it's a list of templates and checklists. It's basically the internal operation manual for the sourcing agency that I run, that I run called PassageMaker. So a lot of times, you know, our niche at PassageMaker are customers who are buying $2 to $20 million per year, but we're contacted a lot by smaller companies who perhaps aren't at that level yet. And rather than just say, hey, good luck to you guys, and then they'll probably fall into these common pitfalls and get eaten by the sharks, I say to them, hey, here's a book that I wrote to help out those customers that can't afford PassageMaker services yet, but it'll give you all of our insider's tips, and then you'll have a fighting chance to survive in Asia. So the Essential Reference Guide to China is available online at my website and on Amazon. And also we're taking that guidebook and with Professor Neil O'Connor, who you interviewed recently,
yep.
He and I are starting a seminar series based on my book. And awesome. That'll launch after Chinese New Year this year called Great. The China Sourcing Academy.
Great.
Our website domain name is the same.
Great, great. I'll link all this. All these great resources up on our show notes of this interview for people that want to check it out. And so then also just the last way for people to reach out to you or to your business, websites or emails or social media links that you'd want to share?
Yeah, yeah. You can find me on LinkedIn under Michael Bellamy. You know, just type in Michael Bellamy in China and my smiling face will pop up. Also, you can visit the website for our family of companies. That's the PassageMaker Group. The website is pmadvisorygroup.com. P for Peter, M for Michael, you know, PassageMaker, pmadvisorygroup.com.
Okay, great. I'll also link that too if people want to check the notes. So that's all we have today, Mike. And thank you so much again for agreeing to be on the show. And it was great.
My pleasure. Good luck to you and your listeners. If I can be of help in any way, please don't hesitate to contact me.
Thank you, Mike Bellamy, for being on the show with us and sharing. I'm always asked this question, you know, people that can't make it to China and buying online and how to buy from China. So I'm definitely going to keep promoting this show to friends in the future. So I'm wondering if people listening have had any bad experiences buying from a Chinese factory. Maybe you guys can leave a comment on the show at globalfromasia.com/episode71. Try to get Mike to reply personally, but if not, we have others that are on the site and listening, as well as me, myself. I'll try to give you guys some tips and feedback. I've also had my bad experiences buying with factories, but then again, Mike does mention that it's also the buyer's responsibility that we have to be clear with the specifications and not just look at price, because there's a lot more involved with price than price alone. So don't use that as a main indicator, because honestly, I have to maybe admit I was just maybe looking at price. And I think a lot of times maybe Americans like me are kind of spoiled with everything being top quality at stores and where we're buying things from. So, you know, we just got to be careful a little bit. All right. Also, I've been keeping a weekly newsletter. I spend at least a couple hours every week writing it up. And it's not just a promotion for this podcast, but it's also news about Hong Kong and China that I find online throughout the week. And it's not a long email, but there's a few different news articles that I think are worth your time to look at or browse over. I've gotten a lot of compliments on it, and it would be cool if some more people checked it out and gave me feedback. It's globalfromasia.com/subscribe. Okay, and that's all I got this week. So cheers, or maybe I should say cheerios.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.